This episode of The Edge is brought to you by Audible.com, offering more than 180,000 titles for smartphone, tablet, and desktop. To get a free audiobook of your choice and help Trek.fm at the same time, visit audibletrial.com/trekfm. And also by Enterprise in Space, an international program of the nonprofit National Space Society. Find out how you can help science and education and become a virtual crew member aboard the NSS Enterprise Orbiter by visiting enterpriseinspace.org. And if you want to join the conversation and share your thoughts on this episode, join the Babel Conference, our listeners group on Facebook. Just type B-A-B-E-L into the Facebook search field. We look forward to seeing you there.
You're listening to Trek FM.
What have you done out there on the edge of Federation space?
Welcome, listeners, to another episode of The Edge, Trek FM's dedicated podcast to Star Trek Discovery. I am your host, Amy Nelson, and with me is the ever faithful co-host, Patrick Devlin. Patrick, hello, how are you?
I'm good. I'm not as good as you. I just got back from Mexico good, but I'm good. How are you?
Well, yeah, I got back from Mexico good, and I'm not teaching good. I'm on summer vacation.
All right, now you're just rubbing it in because you know I just got home from class.
Yes. Wow.
And can I tell you, my students, I had 11 of them in class today, and they had a quiz last week, and one passed. Yeah. Yeah, they were carrying a 94 average for the class going into quiz three, and I didn't do the math yet, but I'm sure it's much lower now that they haven't, that only one of them passed.
Oh, dear. Well, that's not good.
No.
Was this test different? Or the quiz?
Yeah, I'll explain that off the air.
Yeah. I'm like, my teacher nerves are going off.
For my semester, right, there is 24 students. I have 11 of them.
Uh-huh.
There was two people passed for the year.
Oh.
On Wednesday nights. So two out of 24 passed.
Wow.
Yeah, I was furious.
Yeah. That would, Okay. Yeah. We'll talk more because we're not here to talk about education and teaching practices. We're here to talk about Star Trek.
Yes, we are. And we're talking about one particular person today.
Yes, we are. So with the end of the season, we're going to go into some character deep dives, and we are going to start our final mission here with Captain Pike. Captain Christopher Pike. Does he have a middle initial?
Not that I know of.
Okay. Just Christopher Pike.
Yeah.
So I wanted to do this a little differently than what we've done before, because the first thing when I hear Captain Pike, like, everyone loves Captain Pike. I literally have not heard anyone say that they don't like him. I mean, why? I'm asking you, Patrick, why is this? What is it that's so special about Pike that everyone loves him?
So what I think is the reason that everybody has this strong attachment to Pike and feels this way mostly is because it is a tie back to, for them to TOS without being TOS in your face. This is where it all started, but since CBS forced them to change early on, you know, bring in William Shatner instead to play Captain Kirk, this is a tie back, but it's not, okay, now we have to stay within this very confined bubble of making sure he ends up where TOS has to end up. And we got a lot of character development out of a character we've already known.
Okay. So with Spock, I've heard some people, you know, a little wishy-washy on him. But Captain Pike, because he's not so original series, he's just a hint of original series.
Right. So it gives you that revisionist history view back into, you know, looking back with rose-colored glasses, but there's no major details there that they could screw up.
Right. Yes. Yeah.
Because everyone looks back at your childhood, and you'll tell me all the great things that happened, right? You forget about the not-so-great parts.
Yeah.
You never had that with Pike, because all you had was this one episode and then the trailer that came out later, but you had only that, and it was really one story, right? So you only had really that, plus you see a little bit of Captain Pike in the new movies, but people separate them completely. And so you had this clean slate of a character you've already heard of and had some connection to. So you can remember back to your childhood without them being able to screw it up, really. I mean, they really couldn't mess it up because he's so undefined before now that they could do whatever they wanted. And with Spock, you're caught in this bubble again where people are going to look at it, and we've heard it, well, that's not the Spock I know.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Or I said it a million times where, okay, this is great because they're giving us an answer between the two shows. I happen to like the way they wrote Spock. I like what they did because it gave me that difference between, you know, the Spock from Pike and then the Spock from TOS that we know. They filled that in, but there's pitfalls in there for some. Some people are just not going to see it the way I see it, and they're not going to like it. So to them, it tarnishes Spock for them.
Mm-hmm.
You couldn't tarnish Pike, really. I mean, you'd have to do something so outlandish with him that it's just incomprehensible what they would have been able to do to screw this up.
Yeah. Yeah. You know, when I was thinking about why people love and adore Pike, I really just think that he was written well. Like, his character was, he had great command decisions. He was so personable with the crew. Like, just right from the get-go, I want to know who I'm dealing with, who I'm working with. And, you know, just showed them respect, and they in turn respected him. So, like, that personality with the crew was just spot on. I felt that it was a good amount. I mean, a little more personable than Picard, but still professional, you know. So I thought that was, like, right on the line. He was not afraid to make hard decisions, you know. Like, we saw him taking the time crystal, and it's like, I'm going to do this. He was very open to suggestions, and like he was always listening to Burnham and to what his crew had to say. Like Tilly's like, I can do this, and well, let's do it. You know, I mean, he was a man of action. Like he was going down to planets, and you know, he was just like the ideal captain, and he was written that way. So why don't they write all the characters so awesome like that?
Well, look, again, some of them are pigeonholed into the role they have to be in, right? You couldn't change Spock too much from what they wrote because they needed that bridge. They had a starting and an end point already set for them. And I think if you took every character in a vacuum, you'd find that a lot of them are written really well. The problems come in when they try and interact those characters. The writing gets a little sloppy at times. And again, we had no basis for this character, really. And that helps. Whereas everyone that was already on the ship, we had season one into two. So they had to justify what's happening now with what they did before. They didn't have to do that with Pike. They had to justify it with one episode. You know, so it's a lot easier.
You know, and I was just thinking, answering my own question, like, why, like, he was written so well, but he, we know, was only for one season. And like you said, compared to the other characters who are, you know, continuing on, like Captain Pike, he didn't really have any flaws. Like what was his, you know, like Lorca, we know his flaw. We know Burnham's flaws. We know Saru's. Like our characters have flaws, I think, in part to make them relatable and to have this character growth. Where Pike, does he have any major flaws? And I think that's in part because we get him for one season and that's it. So he doesn't need to have the major growth like our main characters do.
Right. Well, and I think that's the one place that Pike lacks is growth. He comes in already a captain and he leaves the same captain. There's nothing that changes in there. I mean, he's a really good captain, but he's already finished. You know, he's already cooked. So there's no places that, and I'm sure for a writer, that makes it a lot easier because sometimes in the writing of a character, they slip up in the way they grow the character, but they didn't do that here. So there was less chances of mess up. I didn't think of that until you just brought this up, but you know, that's, if you could write a show from start to finish, 8 seasons, you never had to change the characters. It'd be a lot easier to write per character for that. It might not make for good TV. that's another story. But you that particular character writing would be a lot easier than having to change them over the years to keep them relevant in the story.
Yeah. You know, and another reason why I was thinking why Pike is so loved and adored is because he's intended to be the best of Starfleet. All the way from season one. Remember when Saru was asking, well, who's the best captains? And they've got Pike on the list as the top five in all of Starfleet, right? So that was sort of already put into our minds from Saru. And now we literally have Admiral Cornwell in this season telling us that Pike, you are the best. Like, you are right. The best of the best.
I mean, they kind of just keep beating their own drum.
So in our minds, he already is the best. So we are set up to love him and we're set up to admire him and think of, oh man, he is so good.
Okay. So it's funny you bring that up because that's true too. And I didn't think of it. And I was just listening to a wrestling podcast and they were talking about this character. The guy couldn't wrestle to save his life. I mean, he was horrible. He hurt everyone he worked with but the fans ate him up. And when the host was talking to one of the people who were on the inside, they're like, he was terrible. The guy on the inside was like, but everyone loved him. Yeah, you know why they loved him? Because he came to the ring, he yelled a couple of nonsensical words, he hit people for 13 seconds, and then he squashed them and pinned them. If you booked anyone to be a beast, people are eventually just going to believe the fact that he's a beast. Right? It doesn't matter that the guy couldn't work. They weren't asking him to work. He couldn't do any moves, so he never did moves. And his whole career, he lost 6 matches. Of course people thought he was the greatest because he always won. And he did it in ridiculously convincing fashion. And that's kind of what we have with Pike here, right? Like, of course people love him because he was set up to only be loved and nothing else.
Right. Yeah. So what makes Pike so special?
For me, it is that tie back. I mean, that's what it is. If you were to just take any captain and throw him at me, and say, well, he's the best. Even if you snuck his name on that list early on, and even if, you know, Cornwell said to the, Captain Johnson, the reason why we sent you away is because you're the greatest of Starfleet. Yeah, it'd be cool, but I could easily forget that guy. But the fact that this is a character from the 60s that never really got fleshed out, I hang on the words a little bit more, a little bit longer. And could we have liked Captain Johnson? Probably, but Captain Johnson probably needed to grow. Captain Johnson probably needed to have some more adversity that he couldn't fix quickly, especially in this kind of storytelling. I mean, when it's episodic, every episode you're going to figure out the answer, right? But now that it's not, I'd want to see him run up against something that he couldn't beat the first time. I mean, that's really how they sold us on Picard, right? Because they knew people were against the new Star Trek. It's not that they were against Picard per se, but they were against the new Star Trek. And the first thing they did was they threw Q at him and he couldn't beat him. So it made him believable. Well, Pike never had something thrown at him that he couldn't beat. I mean, it might have taken a little more thinking or, you know, worked its way through the season, but it was supposed to because that's the way these stories are told. But he always came up with an answer, him or somebody on his crew.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, that's true. And it does have that tie into the original series. And in fact, listeners, as a side note, if you haven't listened to Standard Orbit number 267, it's called The James Bond of Star Trek, I encourage you to do so. They take a look at Pike in the original series, obviously with the cage menagerie, and then they talk about Pike in the Kelvin timeline, and they talk about Pike, obviously, in the Discovery. So it's great. They did a good job covering all the different Pikes and the characters that played them. And in fact, listeners, at the time of this recording, their last 3 shows have been Discovery-related topics, so you can go and check those shows out as well. I just think we need to have them come on over to the Edge. I mean, they're just talking Discovery all the time. I love it.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, we should definitely do something with them at this point, right?
Right.
We're talking the same stuff now, because now we're talking TOS.
Yep. So let's get to the gushy part of Anson Mount. Who plays Captain Pike? This is my favorite part. Okay. So again, people that I've seen on social media everywhere, you know, they like Captain Pike and they love Anson Mount and how he has played Captain Pike. Like, so why do you think it's Anson Mount? Or do you just, yeah, I'm just going to leave it like that. Patrick, why does everyone love Anson Mount?
So, I mean, I think there's a few people who could have pulled the role off. I mean, I'm not going to go through names or anything. I don't think he's the only one who could have done it, but I think he was definitely the best choice for the people who could have done it. And I just think he has this, I'm going to use the wrong word here and it's going to sound wrong, but it's the best way I can describe it. He has this bravado about him that gives him this, like, very sure of himself captain who doesn't make mistakes. And even in making mistakes, he's going to figure out how to make it not a mistake, like feel to him. You know what I mean? So bravado is really not the right word, but I can't think of another one.
Is a great word.
But that he has this already aura to him that he gives off when he's on screen. So it's everything he says and does is much more believable because of that. Now, you know, he also had that, He didn't look old, but he had that like gentleman look to him, you know. And he's not the only person in the world that has that look, but he does have that look. And tie that with the way he portrays the character, you know, emotion wise and facial reaction wise, it's just a perfect culmination of who we believe Captain Pike to be, much because of this show. I mean, I don't think many people looked at this and tied it back to the Kelvin timeline Pike, although that there's similarities in the mannerisms there, but I don't think that's what people were doing in their head. I think they were tying it back to the 60s version, you know, the TOS version. So he was perfect for the role. Perfect place, perfect time.
Yeah. Yeah. He definitely, I think you're right, has that look, that air of confidence, you know, of making the decision of, and you said it perfectly, like if it's something that's wrong, he's going to still fix it to turn it into something right. You know, it's not going to be really a failure. He's going to find a way to fix it, you know? And yeah, that confidence that he has, he did so well. And I love listening to him talk about or reading things when he does interviews, you know, about the character Pike, because he seems to just so fully get into character. And I love that about how Anson does that. And I'm sure they all do. I mean, because I see what they do, but, you know, I just think he really is perfect for the job. I don't know of anyone else that could have played it. And I wonder if, because I watched him on Hell on Wheels, and so I really knew him from that series, whereas like the other actors, I don't know anything about. To me, all of the Discovery actors, well, outside of Lorca, right? We all know him. But what's his name?
I don't know his real name.
Yeah, from Harry Potter. I know.
Yeah, I'm terrible with that. But
Jason Isaacs. Oh my gosh.
Listen, oh yes,
stop
yes.
Stop screaming at me. I heard you in my head. Thank you. but yeah, like, so Anson Mount was really the only one that I knew had done anything, you know, prior to. And so again, if you'd seen Hell on Wheels, it's the same type of confidence in who that person is as a character. Like that self-confidence is just set in a Western, and here we are, Wagon Train to the Stars. Ha, ha, ha.
Well, yeah. No, but so, okay. So I could give you, for instance, who I thought might be able to pull off the role. I don't think they do it as well as Anson Mount, but a person like Chris Noth. He's in The Good Wife, and he was also in... I don't know him from this. My wife mentioned it to me, but Sex and the City, he was big in Sex and the City. Okay, I know him. I know him from watching The Good Wife on CBS right now. But he plays a very arrogant politician. So if you just tweak that a little bit, that's good for this role. You know what I mean? Now, maybe he can't. I don't know the guy personally, but that's a kind of like that. He has the look that I would expect to also play this role. You know what I mean? So it just, for instance, and really, I just really love The Good Wife and I was looking to plug it. But speaking of when, Anson Mount talks about being in character, I don't know if you've spoken to Simon DeLuca lately. He's actually going to meet Anson Mount very soon.
Yeah. I think I would like a picture with Anson Mount. Just saying. Well, let's move on to his story. And I'm very interested to know, like, how you feel that the story went for Captain Pike. Now, Anson Mount has said multiple times in interviews and on his own podcast that we get to know Pike in the middle of his story because we get to see him at the beginning with the cage and we know how he ends up on the menagerie. So discovery is the middle of his story. I like that we get that there. But what part of the story stands out the most to you, Patrick?
For me, it's probably, you mentioned it earlier, but it's probably the part where he takes the crystal and we know that the menagerie is set in stone. That probably stands out the most to me because we know that he kind of was warned that you're going to grab that. It's going to be something bad. You're going to know it. And now you're going to have to live with it. And he does that and he still does it. So that to me, the reason why that stands out so much is because that, epitomizes his character. He's willing to do the tough things to move forward with the mission over his personal well-being.
Yeah, that's very true. Very true. And that's definitely a defining moment. I like his story when he sees Vina again. Like, I love that, you know, and that he cared so much for her and, you know, it sort of broke his heart to leave her again, you know?
Yeah. I mean, that's really cool, except there was that whole creepy she's got a fake version of him there thing going on.
Yeah. So. Well, that's more on her, not him.
It's just a little weird. It's a good part of the story, though. I mean, his reaction to it, and more importantly, like the first time they communicate, you know, that was an amazing piece of art, I mean, by the writers and the directors and everything, but yeah, I mean, I don't see that as a wrong answer, if that's, I mean, it's definitely a noteworthy part of his story, but there's a lot of things, and there's a lot of things that, I will say this, we've talked it up, how they didn't make any mistakes with Pike, but they made a huge one. They made an absolutely huge one we're ignoring. Where's his religion after episode 3?
Oh, yeah. Okay, I have really thought a lot about that. And in talking with Chris Jones also, you know, he brought it up to me and I was just like, yeah. And I think in part that's one of the reasons why that got dropped was because of the change in writers. Remember, we had that.
I know that was only
shift.
Season 1.
No, we had it in season 2 as well.
Maybe. I mean,
that's when those writers left.
I didn't follow that. I mean, I knew we had it early in season 1 and the showrunner, you know, changed and
yeah,
whatever.
We got it again in season 2. And so I sort of attribute it to that because I was so looking forward to that at the beginning of the season of, yeah, we're going to get this great religion and remember the stained glass and how it had all the interpretations of a deity, you know, different cultures. And I was so excited. And now we've got Pike saying that he's, you know, a man of faith and then, yep, never heard from it again. But that's not his character fault.
No, but we're talking about Pike's story. So as far as Pike's story, this starts up. And like you said, it's like, yes. And I'm not even a religious person. Like, in general, I know the histories, I've read the Bible, I've read other texts, but I'm not per se a religious person. I would consider, but I don't think Pike was either, to be honest with you. I think he was a man of faith, like he said, which spoke to me because I believe in things. I just don't necessarily go to church on Sunday. And so I was looking forward to this, and I was also looking forward to how they were going to reconcile this in a Star Trek era. You know what I mean? And because, yes, we've seen it with Deep Space Nine religion and stuff like that, but we didn't see it inside the Federation. And that's what I wanted to see. I wanted to see that story, especially when you had early on, you had a religion of all the religions.
Right.
I really wanted to see more of that. And unfortunately, that does not become part of Pike's story moving forward.
Yeah. And that's a missed opportunity because you're right. It could have enriched his character so much more. And they really could have done using that to add to the mystique of the Red Angel.
Absolutely.
You know,
and
they could have played that more and they really didn't. The only thing is that they're using the word
right,
angel.
Which, and I know a lot of people said, well, that's your tie to religion. But I've heard plenty of people use the word angel and not mean God, you know, so. Mm-hmm. It's not like it's a one-to-one tie. And I think it's more than just a missed opportunity. I think it's a misstep. I think it's a big misstep that if that's what happened where the writers just changed hands and the new writers were like, well, I don't want to write that. I think they dropped the ball on that badly. They dropped the ball badly. Now, maybe they wrote it all out and they got to the end and they realized, well, we got to cut something. But if that's what happened, then they should have cut all of it. They should have cut more out of Pike. He shouldn't have said he's a man of faith. He shouldn't have had a father who taught this. You know what I mean? Like, those things should have never been said. Then I'm not worried about it. I just realized that they had religion in the beginning of the episode season, and then they, you know, the next civilizations they found didn't have it. But we had all this leading up. We had Pike talking about it. We had Saru had religion based into it, you know, and Saru's plays out to when they get, when they evolve. But I mean, doesn't really play any more into that.
Right. Yeah. There was a huge religious culture with Saru's planet.
And then,
again, another missed opportunity.
Yep. Saru could have talked about it a lot more, but we can talk about it. We can have an episode just on that missed opportunity. But, you know.
Yeah, with all the priests and, oh, okay. Yeah, we're going to have to come up with some ideas and talk about those.
But I think that was, and now that I'm trying to think about standout moments, that's a glaring weakness in his story that they just, and like you said, it's not Antimount's fault, it's not Pike's fault, but it is a glaring gap in Pike's story, in the middle of his story.
Yeah. Right. Yeah. I like another part of his story is he seems to know Spock somewhat, like, sort of on the surface. I think he knows Spock, and I think he tries to not pretend, that's not the right word, but, you know, like when we first see him, and he's like, well, Spock's not on board, and he checked himself into the mental hospital. It seemed like he just sort of knew the facts about Spock, but not on a very personable level. And then to see that by the end of season two, I liked seeing their friendship get a little bit deeper and more personable. So I like that story for Pike.
Yeah, I like it too. I like it too. And I think that was, I think it was written, in my opinion, so that it was really Spock's fault that they didn't have more of a personable relationship. I don't necessarily agree with that because the Spock we see in the cage would have been someone who's more personable than the Spock we know in TOS. But I felt that was just on purpose because Spock wouldn't have opened up. But that also, I mean, part of that is too, all right, if Spock never opened up, that's why we didn't hear about his brother, his sister, and all these other things throughout the season, you know? Early on, they're just giving you more little hints as to why, oh, well, Burnham, you know, for the people who, well, we never heard of her before, so what? But if you need an answer, they're giving you little hints to the answer.
So one thing that you talked about was the story that stood out for you was him taking the time crystals. And this has been criticized by quite a few.
Everybody. Everybody.
Well, all right. But it has been criticized as this is now sealing his fate and there's destiny and that there's no way for him to change it. And in fact, when the ship was going to explode and Cornwell and Pike were there and, you know, and he's like, well, I can stay here and I can do this, you know, and then he sort of says, I know that this isn't my end. Right? Because he already took the time crystals. So, How does that play into your head of destiny in Star Trek? I know the writing's not good. I get okay. that. But the idea, let's go above that. Let's talk about the philosophy of this fatalistic, you know, philosophy that is being given to us in this season with that story.
I don't think that it's necessarily a foregone conclusion. And I think had he stayed in that room, we would have found out, oh, nope, you die here instead. They could have written it better. But by her making him leave, let's forget the fact that that door wouldn't have stopped the bomb. But by her making him leave and her be the one to stay, she's determining what's going to happen next. Now, the criticism, and Mark brought this up to me a few times, is that Pike could just stay in there and he could just do all kinds of crazy things knowing he can't die. Well, we're just assuming that. It could very well be that he saw that outcome and now he's going to do whatever it takes to get to that outcome. It doesn't necessarily have to be that that outcome is predetermined and there's no way of changing it. Maybe there's plenty of ways of changing it. However, and it would appear that Pike believes there's no way of changing it at the moment. So he's believing, what's his name? The Klingon, the son, but he's believing the son at this point, but that doesn't mean that that's true. That just means that's what we've been told.
I love that you say that and that you say that Pike believes it because, like, it doesn't have to be fatalistic. It doesn't have to be determined outcome because those choices, that's what could happen. And if Pike is choosing to believe it's going to happen, then he will make
that
choices
will lead to it happening.
That will end up.
And
yeah,
maybe
that self-fulfilling prophecy.
Correct. And maybe it's that ends up being for the better overall for the galaxy. So Pike will continue to make the choices that land him in that position. Because that's who he is, right? But that doesn't mean he couldn't make one different choice somewhere and be somewhere else. So
and
have
change,
you happened
yeah.
to watch The Twilight Zone, the new Twilight Zone?
I haven't yet, no.
All right. So, you and listeners, if you want to understand what I mean by he's making the choices and you're kind of confused, watch Nightmare 30,000 Feet for the new Twilight Zone. That episode explains this whole concept.
Huh. I think I have time after this podcast to go turn it on.
You need to message me afterwards because it is a phenomenal episode.
All right. It's Nightmare at 30,000 or
correct.
Something like
and,
that. Okay.
Tie into Star Trek, the original Nightmare at 20,000 feet was William Shatner, but...
Oh, I love that one. Oh, wait. Okay.
This is a whole reworking of that episode.
Wait, was William Shatner on 2?
He was on... Nightmare at 20,000 feet was the one with the monster on the wing of the airplane.
Okay, no, I haven't seen that one. I've seen the one with the little fortune teller.
Okay,
one.
No, that's not the. Okay. This is an airplane one, but it's but William Shatner was in the original Nightmare 20,000, and then they did a movie for it, and then they did this version of it. It's not the same answer, but it's a great episode. It explains what I mean by, you know, sometimes you hear things or you get a piece of information, and then knowing that information leads you to that conclusion where it might not have in the first place. And again, If you're arguing that you don't like the deterministic of it, that just means you're buying in too and that you're placing it in the realm of it must be that way. And I'll freely admit that I am placing it in the realm of he's going to make the choices to be there. They didn't tell me that. They also didn't tell me that it had to be determined. All they told me was someone said it had to be determined and I don't have to believe that person.
Right, right.
So, yes, we're both making assumptions here. I just like my assumption better than yours.
Yeah.
You know, like that's... So for the people screaming like, no, but they told us. Yes, I understand that. But that doesn't guarantee he's telling the truth.
Right. And I mean, because for them, the, you know, Klingons there, time is fluid. This, you know?
Exactly. And if he had stayed in that room and that explosive had gone off and he didn't die, then they definitively told me this has to play out that way. And by act of God, it's going to.
Mm-hmm.
You know, if he puts himself in harm's way and he's supposed to die, he's not going to. But they didn't. They cheated just enough that she stepped in. Now, you can still believe either way. you could believe that she stepped in because it's determined that something has to, mm-hmm. or it could just be what happened.
It sort of reminds me of in the Kelvin timelines in 09 when Spock tells Chris Pinekirk that, you know, well, you can't tell Spock about me. And then at the end of the movie, he's like, you knew all along. Why did you lied to me? Or, you know, Spock's talking to Leonard Nimoy Spock and he's like, well, I just let him presume, you know, I just let him assume that the world was going to explode if you knew about me. And, you know, I think it's just sort of, you know, it's a timeline that could happen and you just sort of take the assumption and go with it.
Right. And look, there's probably no wrong answer. We could debate whether it's determined or not. I prefer not, because Star Trek has always told me it's not, right? And I prefer my universe is not being determined, and, you know, free will would be, you know, more important to me, the fact that we're making the choices that lead us to where we are. There is something to be said for the fact that there are theories where free will for the individual means that there's still a deterministic for the society, though. So whatever, but we're seeing a determined outcome for an individual, and I don't like that idea necessarily. So I can wrap my head around the fact that just because we've been told by someone that this is determined doesn't mean it is determined. And maybe because we've seen this outcome, we're going to end up at this outcome for that reason. Much similar to when we talked about the control. Why does control gain power? Why does it ends up on Discovery and gets taken? Why? Because it was going to destroy the universe. But knowing it was destroying the universe is what made us put it in front of Discovery to get taken to destroy the universe in the first place.
Well, and it's sort of like, you know, I'm trying to wrap my head around this, and so I'm trying to pull from others. So like in Next Generation and Parallels, where, you know, Worf with his making choices for his life, you know, and seeing all the different outcomes. And I still love that diagram that Geordi puts up. And, you know, the phase shifts is what's going in between those parallels. And we've talked about that with the universes and how slim the thin layers are between the universes. And that could be that we've got to figure out what that Klingon's name is, you know. Oh, my gosh, listeners, I really do apologize. But what Voke's son, you know, and Laurel's son told him, like, that could just be one, you know, layer of this parallel universe, a time that could happen because of the choices that lead up to it, you know. So I think that's a very good way to look at it. And so, Zach, if you are listening, this whole conversation was for you. Okay, so Patrick, do you have any nitpicks about this Captain Christopher Pike?
I mean, I think I went over it. Just the fact that they dropped the religion story, I think that's really it. I mean, I won't even go into my other one.
Is it about the character?
No.
Okay, but now I'm curious.
I just can't stand that guy, that book, goodbye.
Oh my gosh.
We had like 300 of them leading into that. It's a nitpick. You asked for a nitpick. I got one.
Okay, so what are you nitpicking about that we said goodbye to him twice?
No, that we said goodbye to everybody this season. Like, anyone who walked off the bridge, like, if you had to go take a leak, they would, like, all stand up and say goodbye. It was, like, pathetic.
Oh, like, so it's not really having to do
no,
with
No, it's not him. No, my nitpick here, in all seriousness, okay. My nitpick is it should have waited for him. That's my real nitpick. By the time they got to his, the one that really mattered for the season...
Okay, yes.
I didn't care anymore. So it's not. Yeah. I guess it's not really a nitpick of him. It's a nitpick of the writers. Because they should have known this one...
This one mattered.
Right. So wait for it. Why are you giving it to me for everybody else? Like I said, just because I get up and go to the bathroom, everyone doesn't have to salute me goodbye. Come on. Because when you get the ones that really matter, they don't matter anymore because I've seen it so many times.
Let's see. I'm trying to think if I have any issues with this story.
They don't give you any.
Yeah, that's the thing. It's like he's written to be the perfect captain.
That might be the only negative about him is he's actually too perfect. So that if we had, I mean, it's okay because like you said, we have him for one season. But if we had him for more, this would just be, It would be brutal. It would be brutal. And it would probably be brutal to watch this story play out with anyone not named Pike.
Yes. You know, and that's because I've heard that complaint about Picard. Well, he's too perfect. He's not relatable, blah, blah, blah. And so, yeah, you're right. If Pike were to continue, we might be getting those complaints. It's like, well, Pike's too perfect. He always makes the right decision. And, you know, and people can't relate to that.
No, and I don't think Picard was too perfect, but that's another story.
Oh, I don't either. That's why the people are cray cray.
Yeah. No, I think he messed up a lot. I think his obsession with, actually, if you listen to the latest Metatrex, I believe it was.
I just listened to it today.
94, right? Where they were talking about Utopia?
Yeah.
They talk about the fact that he's the great preserver of utopias, right?
And yes.
Yeah, I think that's a big problem because he's way too hands-off, in my opinion.
Mm-hmm.
He's way too by the books. And I think that's a character flaw. And I think if you can't relate to that, I understand. It's not in your character. But everybody knows that person. So I don't understand why people have a hard time relating to that. Pike is too perfect. I can't relate to him. And I don't know anyone who can. Now, that doesn't make for bad storytelling. It's just I don't see me in him. And but like with Picard, I can see people I know in him that are just, this is how it is. We're going to do it like the guy who runs my school is like, this is the rules and we have to follow them exactly. Like, you know, and I don't always agree with that. I'm sorry if you're listening to this and you work at the school. I don't agree with being completely strict on every rule all the time.
Yeah.
I'll do it because that's what I'm told, but I don't agree with it.
All right. Well, Captain Pike, Christopher Pike. You know, I really do love having him on this season too. I think that it was a very good fit. I've heard, again, listening to Standard Orbit, they were talking about the characters and how they're so related to the original series. And I was on record that I didn't want to see Spock. I was okay with Pike, but I really wanted Discovery to stand on its own and not rely so heavily on the original series. But to your point, like, Pike is not a main character, obviously, of the original series. So bringing him in had a very nice fit. I think that he worked in perfectly. We didn't know too much about him so that we couldn't say, oh, that's not Pike. We didn't know anything about him. So what they did right was this amazing captain making great commands, relating well with the crew, you know, just your ideal captain to have for this season. It worked so nicely. It made for a lighter, a more hopeful compared to season one, which I think a lot of us really appreciated and needed to have. And I think Pike brought that in his character. And so to have him on the season two was just incredible.
Yeah, no, I think it was a perfect fit. I think it's, like I said, it's a good way of tying in TOS to this, tying them together. They are, look, you can't get away from it. The fact is, they're timeline-wise, they're very close to each other. So they're going to have some kind of overlay somewhere, right? And to do it with Pike was great. It's also why when everyone was screaming, well, we haven't seen Spock yet, I didn't care that we hadn't seen him yet. Because we had a person that ties us to TOS without being overly in your face. My only negative is that we didn't see number one more. But, I mean, it just wasn't in the writing. So it is what it is. It's not a deal breaker. But I just would have liked to learn a little more about number one. And unfortunately, because Pike is leaving, we're not going to get that. Like, it's not in the cards. And so it is what it is. But I don't know. That's just my take on that part. So.
Well, it's been fun talking about Captain Pike today, but it isn't the only thing we've been discussing on the network. So here's a quick look at some of the other things you may have missed elsewhere on Trek FM.
Previously on Trek.fm, The Orb.
I'm not sure that our mindset has necessarily changed drastically from 1993 to 2019. Perhaps it has. I think it has a bit. But the tendency for this kind of thing to happen may have been there then, but the difference is that today we have these platforms like Twitter and Facebook that amplify it, and it is much easier for people to get together into these groups and push a certain agenda or attack an individual.
Melodic Treks.
But I did actually look back to a lot of the older stuff, like the Jerry Goldsmith scores and even like the James Horner scores. I thought the orchestration style, like I thought was really, really cool to me. Kind of had this more classical, like using only the orchestra, but creating these spooky textures and stuff. I always really loved that kind of sound.
Literary Treks.
And all of a sudden, we see a panel that shows where Kirk and Crisp are. I want to call her Crispy for a second.
There's Spock and Crisp, I think, right?
Okay. That, yeah, Spock and Crisp. I love that cereal. And I had some Kellogg Spock and Crisp the other day.
Warp 5.
You don't give them the tools they need moving forward. It's great to give someone their freedom, but you have to then stay there and help them to get to the next step so that they don't need you anymore to do that. That was the problem with the episode. And I think that plays a big role in not just this episode, but society in general. We've done that a lot in other countries, and we've gone and knocked out regimes and, you know, whatever. And then we don't do anything for the people there. So we're back in the same boat or a worse boat than we were when we started.
And that's what else is happening on Trek.fm.
Check out all these shows and join the conversation about your favorite corner of the Star Trek universe and beyond. You'll find us wherever you get your podcast. If you're an Apple user, be sure to hit the subscribe button in Apple Podcasts on iPhone, iPad, or Apple TV, or the desktop iTunes app to get the latest episodes as soon as they are published. And please leave us a star rating and written review.
Now, listeners, we had our announcement of the three winners. I am so very happy to say that two of the pins have been mailed out. However, I still have not heard from my third person who we announced last time on the Edge. And that would be Artemis, Artermis. Now, if you were the one to write in, please contact me directly so that I can get you your beautiful Captain Pike pin. Here we are talking about him. You could have this pin. So please contact me. I would greatly appreciate it. Now, if you're not an Apple user, we've got you covered as well. You can find our shows on Google Play Music, Stitcher, TuneIn, Spreaker, SoundCloud, YouTube, Windows Phone, in most third-party apps, and you can stream and download the MP3 file from our website or grab that RSS link.
We'd love to hear your thoughts on today's show, and there are many ways for you to do that. The best place to join the larger conversation is the Babel Conference, our listeners group on Facebook. Just type Babel, B-A-B-E-L, into the search field on Facebook, and it should come right up. If you'd like to send us email, you can use the form on our website at trek.fm/contact. Choose to send to a show and select the Edge. That will come right to Amy. You can also find the network on Twitter at trekfm and on Facebook at facebook.com/trekfm. So, Amy, where can people find you when you're not gushing over Anton Mount?
Well, when I'm not doing that, and I do that a lot because he's so yummy, you can find me here on the network. I'm on Earl Grey, which talks about the next generation. I'm also on the Fandom Podcast Network, talking about the Orville on Discoville. I am on Twitter at Miss Amy Nelson, but my favorite place is on the Babel Conference. So, Patrick, where can people reach you when you're not being the best captain in Starfleet?
Nowhere, because I'm always on that list of top five. Always. And I always will be. And I jump from time to time just to make sure that I can do it here and back in the Enterprise for Warp 5 days. So you can find me on Twitter, though, at MagicDrop5. That's no spaces. The five is a digit. You can also find me popping up in the Babel Conference when I have time. I like to interact with the listeners. You can hit me up on Messenger if you want to talk. I answer them as often as I can. And you can also find me, actually, as I mentioned before, in the Warp 5 era with my good friend Brandon Shematella on Warp 5, where recently we just covered Abbott and Costello Meek Frankenstein, because that was a movie night. And we also had one of you, the listeners, on when Karen Chupless came on and we talked about T'Pol. That'll be coming out relatively soon. So, you know, those are the best places to find me.
Excellent. Well, if you'd like to help us keep all our shows coming to you each week, you can become a patron of the network on Patreon. Visit patreon.com/trekfm. That's patreon.com/trekfm to get all the details. Perks include early access to episodes, exclusive content, producer credits, and more available through our special patrons website, the Patron Zone. It requires a great deal of money to produce, host, and distribute these shows each month. We really appreciate any support you can give us and hope you'll join the team. Again, you can find all the details at patreon.com/trekfm.
We'd also like to take time to acknowledge all of Christopher Pike's greatest command decisions. They are Norman C. Lau, Tony Robinson, Thomas Puleo, Lisa Slack, Shoeb Mercer, Richard Rutledge, James Muldrow, Cornelia Reutner, Ryan Millett, Chris Shibuzio, and Brian Malosh. Thank you for supporting Trek FM and The Edge.
Well, thank you for listening, and join us next time to see what's happening on the edge of Federation space.
Everywhere I read, it just says the child.
Oh my gosh. Vorik, Torik, it's something with a K at the end. All right. Tenevic.
Is that it?
Yes, Tenevic.
Okay.
Yep, it is Tenevic.
Literally everything I'm reading is...
Are you on Memory Alpha?
Yes. Only for Kolchar to kidnap the child. The child is a monk on Borath. Like, come on!
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. Tenevic.
So, yeah, that guy.
Yeah, that guy.